That was definitely the first moment I realized I just love music.
Moments in Music.
Welcome to Moments in Music, a podcast by Defected with myself, Monkey. Today we're joined by the one and only Purple Disco Machine, known for his infectious blend of disco and house.
That was definitely the song which got me into disco and house music and also made me think I want to produce, I want to DJ.
He's been lighting up dance floors worldwide.
I ended up playing shows all around the world. It was definitely the moment which changed my life completely.
Get ready for an inside look at his musical journey and creative process. Let's get into it. Purple Disco Machine. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's really nice seeing you again. I was just saying, I don't think we've seen each other since Ibiza. Can't even remember when.
Yeah, it was about damn time.
Yeah, and we played back to back at Radio 1 in Ibiza.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And it was pretty great.
Yeah, it was really fun. Yeah. It was really fun. It was one of the last ones that we had on the rocks in front of Mambo. So pretty iconic. You've been playing in London recently, last night. Your live show, how did that go?
That was great. Way better than expected on a Thursday night. Mm-hmm. And playing two shows in London. Selling out was it's a great thing, especially with a live show now, which is completely different to the DJ set. Mm. And enjoy every single minute.
Yeah, I know that you're playing tonight because my mum has been furiously texting me about how excited she is to go. So I'm excited to hear her a review afterwards, which I'm sure will be 5-star. So,
me too. Yeah. Just tell me what
I'll let you know. I'll let you know. And sort of before we get into the tracks and stuff, we were just talking off camera there about how you've been playing this live show for about a couple of years, but you're slowly expanding it and how different it feels to, you know, being behind the decks just with two USBs. Explain a little bit why you decided to do it and how it feels.
I'm playing as a DJ since 25 years, and I always had the idea of turning my DJ set more into a live set. And when I started working more with musicians during the pandemic, because at that time everyone was available, so I reached out to a lot of musicians, and then I more and more produced my own songs with real musicians. And so for me, then after Exotica and now Paradise, I worked a lot with the same musicians again. And so the next logical step was to bring these musicians on stage to play the songs we anyway worked on together to perform them live. Mm. And I thought of my music as just perfect to be played live on stage. And I also wanted to experience myself as a musician a little bit more rather than a DJ. And so I was creating this kind of Paradise live show 2 years ago. We did a tryout show in Dresden just to see if it works, to invite the musicians, dancers, the features we had on the last singers. And we played in my hometown. And it was a tryout show, and it turned out so well that everyone just laughed, and we said, okay, we have to do it again. And then last year we did a proper tour in October, a proper live tour with tour bars. We played like 20 shows in 5 weeks. And being on the road with 30 people was quite intense.
Yeah.
I learned a lot about myself as a musician, as an artist, and also as a person. Mm. To be with people I haven't seen for a long time, and then in such a intimate situation. And but it's great. Everyone loved it. It was such a great experience. And this year we're going to do a couple of more shows in the US, South America, and two shows in London.
Amazing. You touched a little bit there on like the things that you learned about yourself as a person and as a musician surrounded by so many people. What were a couple of those things?
I think what I learned the most is to be open-minded. I mean, if you have 30 people just traveling in two buses and being together every night, 24 hours a day, and all these different, completely different characters. And I learned a lot about just being open-minded. And it's so great to be surrounded from so many creative people and artists, and everyone is really special in their own way, and you can still learn a lot from other people if you just listen.
Yeah, it's quite a large leap, isn't it? Because being a DJ is actually can be quite a lonely space.
Definitely. I mean, I was like, for 15 years, I was just traveling by my own, and I got really, I was some moments, if you just sit for hours in your hotel rooms, you can't, it's lonely.
Mm.
And that's why since 3-4 years, I now have a team traveling with me, and we became friends, and I feel way more comfortable now traveling with friends and people I really like. We're going on pretty well. And then the next step was now inviting more and more people to prepare this kind of live show, which is super exciting. I mean, it's a lot of effort and work because you have to rehearse. It's a lot of invest also financially, but it turned out pretty well.
Yeah, and you said that you were able to explore a little bit more on your sort of musician side of things. What is your background sort of pre-DJing in terms of like as being a musician?
I mean, I can't really play an instrument. So yeah. I had to learn a little bit because I also wanted to force myself to play a few parts live, mostly bassline parts and effects and stuff and sample, trigger samples and stuff. So for me, it was like also, to learn how to play instruments and how to use synthesizers on stage. And also I learned a lot. I mean, we had every day we had sound check, and it's so great to see how these real musicians just go with the flow and play their stuff. And I learned also a lot on the music side over these 5 weeks being together with these musicians. And it's great.
I think I can imagine it's like, I mean, it's one thing playing a DJ set because, you know, we know how to do that. But it's another thing playing live when you aren't necessarily like classically trained or something. That must have been quite nerve-wracking for you.
Definitely, yeah. So, I mean, like I said, I've never went to a music school, or I can't really play an instrument. It's fine to, when I'm in my studio, it takes definitely like 10 times longer than a real musician would play it. But the result is probably the same.
Yeah.
But being surrounded from these guys, and I mean, that's what I also mean. You can still learn from so many different things, and if you just listen or talk to people and conversations about music. And we were hanging around every after the show. We had like a drink on the bus, and we just talked about music, where they're coming from, and it was super interesting.
Do you feel like this experience is going to help sort of evolve your sound as well?
It definitely. So I think my sound is now even more organic, and in the future, I think I want to produce and want to work more with musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Because back in the days, I always thought like, okay, it's just me, and was like blocking my creativity if I was in a room with too many people. And I just, for me, it was a super, I've never felt comfortable being in a room with other people, just by my own and doing my thing.
Mm.
But now I realized if you find the right people, if you're surrounded from the right people, they understand you're speaking the same language, you're on the same wave, which I found now. It's definitely a game changer if you can work with those people, and it's also being more like, you jam like a band now, just being in front of your laptop, just trying to work with Ableton or something.
Yeah, I really sort of understand that, I think, because I feel like sometimes I struggle to work in a group setting if I can't like vibe with the people in the room.
Yeah.
But as soon as I can, I click, it's like everything kind of just flows, then it's like natural, isn't it?
It's like in a relationship. Yeah. If you're not going on well, then it's complicated, and it blocks the creativity.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing to hear that you found that crew, and I'm very excited to hear what comes out of it. Let's get into the first track. It's an extremely strong choice. Phil Collins, I Can Feel It in the Air Tonight. Tell us about the song, and why has it made such a lasting impression on you?
So this was actually my first idol. So when I was a kid, I think it was like 5, 6, 7. So my parents were big fans of Phil Collins and Genesis. So this kind of music, Genesis, Peter Gabriel, Pink Floyd, was on the radio all the time. My parents played it. My father had a record collection, and he collected vinyls of Phil Collins, for example. And I heard this music, and this, especially in the air tonight, this song so many times. And then they took me to a concert when I was like 11 or 12 after the fall of the wall. It was beginning of the 90s. They took me to my very first concert, and it was Phil Collins. And I just remember this moment, the stage was like a circle, and on top of the circle was like his drums, and they were singing In the Air Tonight. And this, there was such a special moment to me. And then he went up and played this drum solo, and I just still get goosebumps thinking of it. So this completely, for me, it was a game changer, because the first time I realized, okay, music is also has a special meaning for me. Mm. And then I also started collecting CDs or vinyls, and there was, this song is still so special, and I still get goosebumps listening to this song.
How old were you when you went to that concert?
I think it was 11 or 12. That's was it, I think 1991 or 1992, something.
And whereabouts did you grow up in Germany?
I was in Leipzig.
In Leipzig?
So it was, yeah, was the closest city to Dresden. It was like an hour from Dresden. And that was definitely the first moment I realized, okay, I just love music.
Well, big up your parents for taking you to an amazing show.
Yeah, definitely.
They must have had a real sort of profound impact on you musically.
Definitely, yeah. Maybe not the music I'm doing now, but bringing me into music, or that what music means, so what kind of special feeling it is. Mm. I have a lot of conversation with my father about music. I mean, it's different. It's a different taste, but we still have the same feeling listening to music, the same emotions, and this is great to see.
Yeah, it must be nice to share. And what was it like sort of growing up in Leipzig around that time, sort of in the 90s?
I mean, I grew up in Dresden, so till the fall of the wall, I had a great life. So the first 10 years, I never experienced these issues, not to be able to travel, or that most of the music got banned. And I just know the stories from my dad that to collect music, it wasn't easy at that time, because most of the music got banned from the government. So he always drove to Czech or to Hungary, to the black market, to get the vinyls from there and then bring it back. And if you got lucky, you can pass the border. If not, then you're fucked. But it is like, for me, it was great. So, but in the 90s, it was a wild time, because after the fall of the wall, so this kind of techno wave was floating. And also Dresden was close to Berlin, so this whole techno thing was happening in Dresden, and all these illegal parties. And also for me, when I was like 15, 16, and I looked like 12, there was no way to go to a legal party. So that's why I ended up in illegal warehouse parties where just a techno DJ played, and just strobe and fog. And that was great.
So was techno and those sort of illegal parties, was that your kind of first experience of like a rave or a party?
Definitely. I think classmates brought me into this kind of techno. I was never really into the music, but I was more into this clubbing thing. I was really obsessed from DJs. Mm. I was this weird guy just staying for like hours in a corner without moving and just staring at the DJ, just trying to understand how that works.
Yeah.
And there was also the first time, I was like mid-90s, I would say, the first time I realized that I really like electronic music. Mm. And that's the first time also that I was... Yeah, I tried to do exact. I mean, it was the puberty. So I just wanted to do exact the opposite my parents did. So my parents were more into rock music and classical music. And I said, okay, I just want to listen to the music they hate the most. And it was techno.
Yeah, yeah. And was there like, because I remember when I was younger, there was a moment and there was like a record that I heard. And then I was like, okay, I think I want to give this a go. Do you remember having that moment? Was it in a club or listening to an electronic music tune? Or?
There were a lot of those records. I mean, I can't really remember. I mean, the Daft Punk Around the World is one of those records. Mm. I was 16 when this song came out. And I remember that we threw at school in the basement with like parties. And a classmate just got the new album of Daft Punk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was 76 or 79, 96 or 97. And I've just realized that this moment I heard Around the World for the very first time, and I couldn't really say what it is. It was like, it combined so many different genres. It was a little bit of techno, which I liked at that time, but it was also a little bit of disco, which came from my parents, but also rock influence and house. Was everything was just, it was so different to everything else I heard at that time. And so that was definitely the song which got me into disco and house music, and also made me think of, okay, I want to produce, I want to DJ, I want to start collecting money to buy a turntable and stuff.
Daft Punk is one of the records that you chose, obviously an iconic tune, and off the back of that you just said that, you know, that's what made you want to get turntables and things like that. When was the first time you picked up a turntable or you managed to save up one?
I saved a lot of money and to buy my first turntable, and I realized that I had no idea how it works.
Yeah.
I had no skills, I think it was a Bell Drive, the cheapest one, and then I had one turntable, one cheap mixer, and then one CD player, and I started with the vinyls of the record collection of my parents to try to find out how to mix songs, which was almost impossible because belt-driven turntables were anyway the worst thing at that time. And then if you just have one, and then an CD player where you can't just change the tempo, it was horrible. And then I went to the record store, the only record store in my hometown I knew, but I had no idea about artists, label, I just didn't know anything.
Right.
So I just went through the genres and picked the covers I liked the most.
Yeah.
And then I bought the stuff. Most of it was just shit.
Yeah, all different BPMs as well.
All different BPMs, different genres. Yeah. I had no clue. So mostly was techno, because I felt like, okay, start working and on the skills with techno music was the easiest because it was loopy and was easy to mix. And yeah, that was the beginning. And then my grandma saved some money, and there was giving money that helped as well to buy stuff, to buy my first vocoder and synthesizer. And so that's how everything started. Actually, producing and DJing started more or less at the same time.
Okay. Yeah. So you were trying to mix with a CD player and a belt drive deck, which is not setting yourself up for success,
but, it helped now. I mean you can mix on every turntable, so it definitely helped. It took me up, it was quite frustrating, but at that time, like I said, it was like 1997 1998, and I used to work as a chef at that time for 3-4 years, and I worked from 3 p.m to midnight, so all day I just had time to work on my skills, because all my friends were working during the day. My parents weren't there, the neighbors weren't there, so I just could turn on the music and then just working on my skills. And I spent like hours every day to train.
And obviously back then, sort of YouTube wasn't a thing, you know, it's hard to pick those things up quickly. From a production side, what was the starting point for you? Where did you even begin?
There was new YouTube or something. I didn't know anyone who did the same music or who produced. So I installed Fruity Loops at that time and was just trying out stuff. And then someone told me, you need a sampler, you need this and that. And then I got this Korg Electribe series, which was a drum computer and a sampler. And then I got an Orange vocoder, because I wanted to recreate Daft Punk. I said, okay, they use a vocoder, but I had no idea what kind of vocoder it is. So I got the cheapest vocoder. It was the Orange vocoder. And but I was just, the first steps were just rubbish stuff. But I did basically the same what they did. I just sampled my favorite disco songs and that how it started. I just looped it and chopped it, and then working with a drum computer on drums, and that's how everything started.
Yeah, it's so interesting talking to different DJs and different producers, because I feel like there's always one common thread. There's always somebody that helps them out at the start. So for your example, it's your grandmother. but there's usually also somebody that kind of helps them along with the production process at the beginning, who kind of like takes them under their wing. You're actually the first person I've spoken to where you had to figure it out pretty much.
Yeah, there was no one.
Yeah.
There was, I didn't know any person. I mean, I had a classmate who had turntables and could mix a little bit. Mm. So we spent a lot of time together, completely different kind of music. He was more into hip hop and stuff, but at least he got two turntables and not just one.
Yeah.
And so this helped to understand how it works. But on the music side, on the production side, it was just, and then I was just collecting, like I had this Magix Music Maker. I was like puzzling. You had just samples and was just trying to make something good out of it. And try to analyzing music. I was analyzing a lot. This also something because I didn't spoke any English at that time.
Right.
And I had no clue about the lyrics and what they're singing about. So for me, I was just focusing on the music completely. Mm. Also Phil Collins, I had no clue what he's singing about.
Yeah.
And I was completely analyzing the music, how he produced it and how he arranged it. What makes this song special? Why is this song became a success and this not? So this was, I spent a lot of time analyzing music because I was just focusing on the instrumental.
Yeah, that's an interesting sort of view on it that I've never really heard before. Let's get into this choice that you've made, Supernature. Can you talk us through this one?
Supernature was definitely before I experienced Daft Punk. Was like, I was also mid-90s. And I was obsessed from this kind of Italo disco. So a friend of my father, he used to be a DJ. Mm. And he burned me CDs of extended or 12-inch versions. And at that time, I was so obsessed of like this long extended version because, like I said, I analyzed music and was the best way to analyze songs because you had all these, you had like eight-minute songs and you could literally hear every single element of the song. Mm. And so I was obsessed with this kind of Italo disco versions, and Supernature was so inspiring. I mean, it's like 10 minutes. It's an absolute masterpiece. And also what I liked was the first time I realized this song or this kind of music combines the music my parents liked. It's more like organic music, more like funk, disco, rock, organic stuff, and electronic music, the music I liked at that time. So this combined both parts. So that's why also Giorgio Moroder, The Chase, or I Feel Love, this kind of music was really, really good for me to find my own way because it had this electronic feeling. And then my father was also more and more into electronic music. I went with him to see Jean-Michel Jarre or Moby. So he also experienced more and more my kind of music, more electronic music. He was also a big Kraftwerk fan. And so that's why Supernature, for me, it's the perfect combination of late 70s disco and modern, like mid 80s. Electronic music.
Yeah, I feel like hearing your story now, it's much easier to understand how the music that you create now is so easily transferred to a live show, for example, because there are so many like real like musical elements, whether that be the sampling or the drums or whatever it is. And hearing you talk about your dad's influence and your parents, but then also the music you're into and that sort of evolution of like binding them together is really cool.
Yeah, definitely. So my first musical steps through my parents were just organic rock music. There were no electronic music. I mean, in the air tonight, there's a lot of electronic instruments like a vocoder as well. Mm. Maybe this is also a point why I just love this song. So the first steps which got me into music were just organic stuff. And now being on stage with real musicians feels a bit like going back, seeing me as a kid staying in the crowd watching these live musicians performing with a full band.
Has your dad come to see a live show?
He came to a couple of shows.
Yeah. What did he think?
I mean, he just loves it. I think it's now closer to what he likes.
Yeah.
I mean, he always supported me. So that's also, I think, a big thing and why I have to thank my parents. So, I mean, it was a tough time, especially so, I mean, 2004 is when I quit my job as a chef and decided to be fully musician or a DJ, freelancer. And the first 10 years were just horrible. So it didn't pay it off. I had no money to pay my bills or to pay the rent. I mean, I was happy. I could finally make the music. I played DJ shows. I had my residency in my hometown, which also was super important to me to play like 6-7 hours every Friday as a resident to build up from 10 to 6 in the morning, to build up the night, to read the crowd. Now, I learned a lot from those nights and also, I mean, it's like spending every Friday night with your friends and be able to play the music and get paid. I had a great time, but overall it was just it was a tough time for my parents to see me just struggling and they were always helpful, so were always supportive and never gave me the feeling you're on the wrong way. So that's why I have to thank definitely my parents, that they were always so supportive, and not just on the money side, but also just give me the feeling it's good what you're doing. So as long as you're happy and you're not going too crazy. And I was never into drugs or something. Yeah. That's why I never got into trouble or always focused on the music.
Yeah, that's amazing to have that support system. And you mentioned it being quite a struggle professionally for about 10 years. What was the sort of turning point? I have one of your records here, My House. Would you say it was around this point or a little bit before?
There was definitely the turning point. So there was like 2013, so 10 years later. I actually already quit with the music thing. So, okay, I turned 30 and I was like, okay, that's it. For me, 30 was a big thing. So, okay, I give my career, when I'm turning 30 and it's still the same, I'm still successful, no money, I'm gonna quit. I said, okay, I can't do this anymore. And then I met my wife and it was, okay, I have to change my life now. Mm-hmm. It's like, I can't do this anymore. I wanna live just a normal life. Mm-hmm. And then I stopped playing shows and I just started Purple Disco Machine, actually just for fun. Right. So I was never into, I want to play shows every weekend. I just worked on music just for myself. I released it on my own imprint at that time. I didn't care if I get bookings or not. I didn't care if someone else is playing the songs. Mm. So that's why I just released the music worked on songs and produced music I liked. I went back to my roots because at that time, the whole music industry completely changed. It was like this EDM thing was just blowing up and I ended up playing more and more on EDM festivals. And then I finding myself playing more EDM songs I'd actually hate it. Mm. And so, okay, I'm not enjoying these shows anymore. I don't make any money out of it. So just stop.
Yeah.
It was a tough decision to decide, okay, that's it, to give up. And but at that time, I went back to my roots, started making the music I actually did 10 years ago when I just sampled disco songs. Mm-hmm. So just for myself. And then I released it and then I did My House, which I started playing. I played a couple of shows in my hometown. So, and then I played out the song. I road tested it and it turned out pretty well. Then I met a guy from Berlin. He signed the song off recordings, released the song. And once the song got released, my whole life changed. And was 2013. And at the same time, I got my daughter. My daughter was born and I said, okay, that's it. Now I have a kid. Mm-hmm. I'm responsible, not just for myself, also I have a baby, I have a wife. So, and everything happened at the same time. And it was kind of a weird moment.
Yeah, it must have been a bit surreal.
It was surreal because, I mean, if you say, okay, that's fine, and I don't want to play any more shows, I focus more. I used to work in an elementary school, mm-hmm. kind of as a teacher,
yeah.
and just to pay my bills, and I was completely happy. I had a completely different life at that time, and it was fine. I was completely happy with my family life. I'm more like a grown up person rather than a DJ just waking up at 11 in the morning and just so that's why it was a weird moment then to get booking requests from all around the world without saying, I don't want to travel anymore. I'm 32 now. Just I'm happy to go to bed at 11 on a Friday night. Yeah. So that was a weird thing. But at that time, my wife was super supportive.
Yeah.
She really believed in me, even when I thought it's not going well. This will not gonna happen. And so she said, it's a great thing. I mean, you obviously just love music. You can't live without. Just play these shows. Let's see how long it goes, and then go with the flow.
And it hasn't stopped.
It never stopped. It got better and better. I think she regret that she said. I don't know, but it went crazy. And but this song, My House, changed my life for I think not just 2013. It also got signed by a major label. Mm-hmm. That's why I met my manager, Matt Jagger, and which is still my manager. And this is also something I think it's also a big. A reason why Purple Disco Machine, or why I'm sitting here now. Mm-hmm. So he's definitely one of the main reasons why this song got so successful. And then 2017, the same song got re-released again with vocals as Devil and Me, and was my first gold record, my first radio hit. Mm. So the same song opened so many doors.
And from the moment that you thought you were going to quit to the moment that you got a gold record, how long was that period of time?
The gold record was 2017, and the moment I decided to quit was 2010. So it was like 7 years in between. But I think that the moment I released in 2012 or 13, My House, was definitely the moment which changed my life completely. So from one day to another, I ended up playing shows all around the world.
Yeah.
And at the time, I still used to work as a teacher. So I played on a Saturday night. I played a show even on a Sunday night. Took the first flight in the morning back to Germany. And then 8 a.m. I was sitting at school in front of 6 to 10 years old kids, trying to not fall asleep. And it's like, I can't do this anymore. And then, I took the risk again, like I did 2004. And it's like, okay, I give it another try, second chance. And obviously it worked.
What do you think sort of played a part in that record being so successful? Do you think maybe it had something to do with being like, I'm just going to make songs for me and go back to my roots?
Definitely. I think I was asking myself a lot, what was the difference to all the years before?
Yeah.
In my opinion, all the songs, I had another project and I released 2 or 3 albums, kind of the same music, maybe a bit more electro clashy, more electronic, but the same kind of vibe. And I think the main reason why Purple Disco Machine got so successful in such a short time was I had no pressure anymore. Yeah. So I wasn't signed with a label. I wasn't signed by an agency. I was free. I was completely free. I didn't, like I said, I didn't bother if I have to play shows during the weekend, or if I had no clue what's going on the dance floor, what's going on the radio. I was completely disconnected. I just listened to music from back in the days, from 70s and 80s. I was, I was just making the music I always wanted to do without any pressure, without any expectations from a major label or from an agency or from myself. So
I think that for some people that would be really sort of comforting to hear, because I think sometimes people put a lot of pressure on producers having to know what's going on in clubs all the time. But I would say most of my friends that are producers usually are start off as quite sort of introverted people and not necessarily like wanting to be, you know, on a dance floor all the time. But the fact that you freely made this record without really being in the mix of things, you know, is quite inspiring.
Definitely. I mean, I'm definitely more kind of an introvert person. Mm. So I still feel uncomfortable being on stage. And this like being behind the DJ set is feeling like it's a wall which protects me.
Yeah.
So I could never be a singer just being in front of the crowd without this protection. So I need the DJ booth to protect me. Mm. And so, I mean, it's now I feel more comfortable now because I know people coming to see me, but being on a festival like 10 years ago, for example, just you never know what happens. So every show is different. You never know if they boo or if they like the music or if they hate what you do, and you're always insecure and uncomfortable. And so I always try to just to focus on myself, on the music, and try to make the best out of it.
Yeah. And you spoke about having that sort of freedom, and that's what brought out the best in you. Now things are much like bigger, and you obviously have record label deals and things like that. Do you still feel that way, or do you still try and keep that feeling when you go into the studio?
Of course. I mean, there's a little bit more pressure now. Yeah. But I think the reason why I still produce almost every song in my own studio, this is my comfort zone. I've just found out, I tried to, on my first album, I tried to write in different studios. So I also went to Sydney to write there, or in different cities. But I always felt like I'm not that creative when other people are in the room. And it's just, I feel more comfortable just being in my comfort zone in my studio, and I don't feel any pressure there, because if I don't have a deadline, I just can make the music I like, and if it's not good enough, then I'm not going to send this to anyone. I just delete it, and if I think it's all right, then I play it to friends or to my manager. And this is still the same.
Yeah.
I still feel free making the music.
That's amazing.
I always wanted to do.
Yeah. The last record that you've chosen, another one of yours, Body Funk. Tell us about this record.
Body Funk also opened a lot of doors, which was for me the next big step for Purple Disco Machine, because after having this kind of underground hit and then radio success in 2017, Body Funk was the first big club banger which got played by so many different artists. I think which brought me on the radar of so many A-list artists and also promoters. And so it's one of the most played songs in my sets. I think that since we released the song, there was no DJ said, I haven't played this song.
Really?
It's the most played. I still like it because it's like, it actually started as a mashup. So I never thought of releing this song. So I thought, okay, let's do a song for my DJ set, which combines my love for Italo disco and for disco to recreate the feeling, but in a modern way. Mm. And so then I combined these two samples. And and then I played it out. I road tested it. The reaction was great. I got asked more and more, what's this track? What the name? The track ID? And then we could clear the sample. And then we released it, and it got so many plays. It got bigger and bigger. And I think it's still one of my personal favorites because it combines the music I started with and the music I always wanted to do. And I think it describes the sound of Purple Disco Machine best.
Yeah. Well, I was about to say, whenever I hear one of your records, or even if I hear a record and I don't yet know that it's yours, because either I haven't looked at the track name or somebody's not said, I feel like I can be like, that's Purple Disco Machine. record. Like as soon as I hear it, I'm like, that's your sound.
But that's laziness because I always use the same sounds and the same. I actually use the same kicks in 3 years on every single record.
I don't think that's a bad thing though.
Yeah, that way I stopped wasting my time with going through my kick folders and just ending up the same one. I said, okay, yeah. I have my preset. And then so it saves time, but it's mostly laziness. But it's okay. I mean, I'm quite impatient.
Yeah.
And I'm not the type of guy who can listen to an 8-bar loop for like 2-3 hours. This drives me crazy.
Yeah.
And so I usually finish a song within 3-4 hours.
Yeah.
And then I have another session the next day, and then but 2-3 days, and the song is done. If I can't finish a song in 3 days.
You probably know it's not
It's not the right one.
Yeah. I think that's a great process to have. I love your honesty as well.
Yeah.
talk about the sort of creative process. So you kind of touched on it there. Like you have a kick that you often use. You know that if you don't finish a tune within 3 days, it's probably not going to work. What other sort of areas are you very like strict on or you know about yourself?
I'm quite structured. So, yeah. I mean, as a German, you're super organized. So I really like it to be structured and have the same kind of, I mean, when you work on music and it always starts with the same thing. So I just have my drum setting and then I start with the same synths, with the bass line and harmonies and stuff. I have a routine but I need this moment every time I'm working on a song. I need this special moment where I think, oh, that's going to be special.
Yeah.
Mostly when I start dancing in my studio just by my own. Mm-hmm. And this is like this special feeling. And yeah, so I need this special moment to know, okay, that's something really special I'm working on right now.
And is that, I feel like I know what you mean, but I kind of find it hard to describe. It's like something inside.
Yeah, you can't describe it. But I think if I won't have this feeling why I'm produced a song, no one else will feel like this.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, the music is always subjective. So, yeah. But it's all about emotions and feelings. So, yeah.
And you love playing around with like edits and reworks and stuff like that. Are those things you sort of just do for fun and then sort of later may be released or?
Yeah. So, especially nowadays. So it's super important to have songs no one else is playing in your set. So my DJ set became more like over the last 4 or 5 years, my DJ sets became more like live shows because I play like 90% of own songs. And even if I don't play my own songs, I do like mashups or edits of songs I like. Mostly songs I grew up with, classic songs songs from the 80s or 90s or from the French house or French touch. But this was always something special I recreated songs I liked and do this kind of edits and mashups just to make it fit to my DJ set.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's a big year this year. You're going to continue the live show. Can you tell us where it's heading this year?
I'm definitely going to play less shows than last year, but we're focusing more on live shows.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to play a lot of course, second show tonight in London. There are a couple of festivals. Red Rocks is a big one we do in the US, which is such an iconic venue. Yeah.
Have you played that one before?
I played support act for Chromeo like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's such an amazing venue, and it's so impressive. And when you just stay there and just look at this 9,000 people amphitheater, it's quite scary, to be honest. Yeah. But I'm looking so forward to play my headline show, to play the live show there, especially to play the live show in America, which is completely different market to Europe, and see how it goes there. And
this is the first time you would have taken it there.
This is the very first time we bring the live show to the US.
Yeah. And how have you been received by the US audience as a DJ?
Great.
I guess.
I mean, DJ is great. So we play since 10 years. America became such a big market.
Yep.
I don't know why, but we sell way more hard tickets there than in Europe.
Okay.
So the music was never on the radio, but I think my music is still niche, but America is so big that even the niche is bigger than Europe.
Yeah.
And it's
I also find like once you have fans there, they're like dedicated.
Yeah, definitely. And they dress up and it, yeah. I really like playing in America.
Yeah, me too. I know that whenever I go there and play a show, it's like the Defected fans always come and they're wearing a Defected t-shirt or they're like, well, listen to you on the radio. And it's quite different. And it's really refreshing.
Yeah, super supportive.
Yeah, really supportive.
Yeah, that's something I'm looking forward to. And then Ibiza season, I just love the island. And it feels like a second home because it's so small and you know all the roads and the different areas and restaurants and beaches. Can't wait to be back on the island. And yeah, then my hometown show. Mm-hmm. So we do like since, I think the fourth year now in a row, we play the headline show in my hometown in Dresden, 12,000 capacity, and it's great and sold out so quick. And it's like a really special thing for me to play in my hometown because I haven't played for so many years. I always was always scared to go back to Dresden to play DJs. I never felt the support from my hometown till 2020, maybe. Mm-hmm. Before I would always play it all around the world, but never in Germany. Yeah. So, but since we released Hypnotized and all the songs became successful also on the radio, I play more and more shows in Germany and also realize that it's so great to play a show in your hometown and get and like we sold 80% of the tickets to people from Dresden.
Amazing.
And it's so crazy if you then look at the crowd and you see your classmates from back in the day, your teacher, your all the people you haven't seen for so many years, and it's great.
How old is your daughter now?
She's almost 12.
Has she seen you play at all?
Yeah, she came to a couple of shows. I mean, and years ago, she was really into my music.
Yeah.
Now she's, I mean, I think more kind of accept what I'm doing.
She's doing what you did. She's going the other way, right?
Yeah. But she likes more like a singer-songwriter, German stuff, and which is fair enough. So she's just exploring her own music taste and... she's not so into my music. She accepts it's fine.
Yeah,
but
it's fine.
it's okay. It's all right. But I think she wouldn't go to a concert. My son is fully into PDM, so he's crazy. He's every time we go on holiday, he's telling everyone what I'm doing. It's like quiet.
How old is your son?
He's 9.
Okay. Do you think he'll come to the homecoming show?
He's definitely coming.
Yeah.
I mean, he came last year and he slept the whole show.
Okay.
I don't even know how that's possible with fireworks and everything. He just slept through the whole show.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's now starting. Also working on his DJ skills.
Oh, cool.
And he dressed up as Marshmallow recently. It was super funny with his helmet.
And when is that show? When is that homecoming show?
It's in mid-August.
Mid-August.
Yeah, okay, like cool. I think 16th of August or something.
Amazing. Well, it's been really lovely to have you on the podcast and catch up after all this time.
Thanks for having me.
And yeah, looking forward to seeing what you do this summer, and I'll probably bump into you in Ibiza.
I think so. Thank you.
Thank you. Moments in music.